We're going to chat with Mitch Horowitz, author of The Miracle Month, about a few more things he's working on. Then we're going to take your calls this hour on miracles right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Mitch Horowitz, our special guest, The Miracle Month. Mitch, you've been dabbling with tarot cards lately. Tell me what's going on there.
Yeah, I've been studying tarot cards really intensively. I've probably done hundreds upon hundreds of readings at this point. At the start of the COVID crisis, I was doing free readings for healthcare workers. I don't do, you know, commercial readings. I don't do readings for money right now. That's not my thing. But I've done hundreds of readings. And, you know, I just find that it's so practical. It's so real. It's so intimate. There were so many accurate hits that I got to asking, look, you know, is this real? Is this just projection? Is it the equivalent of shaking a magic eight ball? What's going on here? And my contention is, basically, I think tarot is a kind of universal language, and it captures a snapshot in time. It captures a kind of snapshot or a timestamp of everything that's going on around us, in the sense that, you know, in the Miracle Club, I write about the fact that time is basically an illusion. I mean, we've proven that time is an illusion because it bends at extreme speeds or extreme conditions of gravity. It's not an absolute. There is no linear time. So it stands to reason that if we can freeze a moment, take a measurement, we'll call it a measurement of what's happening at what we experience as a given point in time, to a certain extent, that measurement captures what might be called infinity or serial universes. And I do think it shows us everything that's going on, so-called past, present, future, which is one of the reasons why I think tarot as a divinatory language may really be authentic.
You know, tarot fascinates me. Is it sometimes the interpreter of the cards who's doing the magic of it, or is it the person who pulls the cards for him or herself? I've had Art Rosengarten on, and Art pulls the cards for listeners, so he's doing everything, and that fascinates me.
I have found that probably the person who's pulling the cards does play a certain part in it. They're taking a kind of emotional measurement of what's going on, and yet the fascinating thing, as you were just describing, is that it doesn't matter whether the person is in proximity to you, it doesn't matter whether they're distant. It's the same thing that psychical researchers have discovered in clinical studies of ESP. It's not susceptible to time, distance, space. There's something else going on. There's some anomalous exchange of information going on, and it's not like radio waves. You know, it's not something that we can define according to the physical properties that we know. It seems to be impervious to distance and time, and in my personal experience, it does seem to be real.
You've got a new movie coming out soon, don't you?
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. It's called The Kabbalion. It's a feature documentary that we shot on location in Egypt, and it is complete. The director is my friend Ronnie Thomas, who has a series on AMC right now called The Broken and the Bad. He's a brilliant director. It is a complete feature-length documentary about this mysterious occult book from 1908 called The Kabbalion, which purports to be a compendium of ancient Egyptian wisdom. We go and trace the book to its historical sources, to its modern sources, and we interview people whose lives have been affected by it, including Ray Moody, who coined the term near-death experience, and a whole range of other people who work as alchemists or mediums or hypnotherapists, psychics, astrologers, tarot readers. It's a really wonderful movie. It's going to be coming out later in 2021. There are clips of it on my website, MitchHorowitz.com. It's the pinned tweet on my Twitter account, which is at Mitch Horowitz. And it's just a beautifully done movie with real occult properties. I'm really excited for it to come out.
Oh, fantastic. The Secret Teachings of All Ages, written by Manly P. Hall, who on March 18th of this year would have been 119 years old.
Yes, right on. And I'm delivering a lecture online in honor of Manly's birthday. It's about Hermetic wisdom. Hermeticism was the philosophy of late ancient Egypt. Corresponds with a lot of what we've been talking about, a lot of what we've been discussing about thoughts being causative, the workability of prayer, the limitless nature of life. I'm going to be delivering this lecture live, online, in honor of Manly's birthday. People can learn about it at my website or the website of his school, prs.org. He was a great occult scholar, an influence on lots of people, including President Ronald Reagan. And I've done a number of articles demonstrating that Reagan drew ideas and phrasing from his political speeches, from some of Manly Hall's books. I've written about that in the Washington Post, a variety of other places. There was no one like Manly Hall. He was the dean of American occultism.
Now, you've been writing a lot about the Knights Templar. What's your interest there, Mitch?
It's really interesting to me. The Knights Templar were a Christian order of Crusader knights that were brutally suppressed by the church in the early 1300s. The church came to see the Knights Templar as a potential rival in terms of financial power and military power, and I thought, you know, in addition to it being an important historical episode, it's a parable of human nature. Very often, powerful institutions will project their own flaws and corruption onto weaker institutions or individuals. And it's a very dangerous trend in society. We saw it during the witch crazes in Europe, for example, where witches accused witches would get blamed for things that were going on in other more powerful quarters of society. I fear that we're on the brink of this kind of thing again. We divide up against one another, and we usually blame the weakest among us for whatever the flaws or shortcomings or corruptions are within powerful institutions. The Knights Templar were accused of all kinds of terrible things that really reflected what was going on in the high reaches of the church and the aristocracy at that time. So their history and their story is kind of a warning against scapegoating. There's a great book about the Knights Templar called The Temple and the Lodge, which I just wrote a new introduction to if people are interested.
Let's go to the phones. First-time caller Mark on the island of Oahu in Hawaii. Hello, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hey, George. Nice to talk to you and your guest, Mitch.
Thank you.
It's almost like being on Halo ground here.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Mark. You're on with Mitch.
Well, Mitch kind of hit a chord earlier when he spoke about expecting, or not expecting, but witnessing miracles in the most inconspicuous meetings with, like, strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened to me about 5 years ago in church. Prior to that, my mother passed away. Maybe 5 years prior to that.
Okay.
Anyway, in our church, it's called Cathedral. Mm-hmm. They have a tradition where travelers, people who aren't members of the church or regular attendees, come to Mass and, you know, they welcome them, they acknowledge them, they put lays on them to make sure they feel welcome.
Yeah.
Anyway, just so happened this family of travelers came to sit right in front of the pew that myself and my wife were sitting in. And then come to this part of the service where before communion they tell you, you know, peace of the Lord be with you always and offer your neighbors the sign of peace.
Yeah, sounds like a Catholic Mass, by the way, Mark. Was it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay.
And you shake hands with the people around you. This so happened, the first person that extended their hand to me was this inconspicuous lady, you know. Looked like she was kind of European descent.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, as soon as I touched her hand, I felt this, like a shock, like it wasn't really physical shock. It was more like a mental shock, if you can kind of imagine that.
Yeah.
But her hand was so soft, it reminded me of my mom's hand. And then I just heard my mom's voice say, good boy.
Wow.
Wow.
Now let me ask you, Mitch, is that a miracle or what would you describe that as?
Well, I would have to describe that as a miracle. You know, it's an extraordinary departure from all expected circumstance, and it's not for us to know exactly what was going on, but it reconnected the caller with his mother. It reconnected him.
And he heard that voice.
And he heard that voice. He heard that as a tactical, real experience. It's not for me or anybody else to say, you know, what was going on. And it led him to an extraordinary positive place. You know, the thing I always say is the only way you can measure inner experiences through conduct. There's no other way to measure it. I can't prove or disprove what occurred to another person. I can look at their conduct, and it improved his conduct. It made him a person who was closer to other people, and in that sense, I'd have to describe it as a miracle.
Walter in Allentown, Pennsylvania is with us. Hey, Walt, welcome.
Hi, George. Always great to be on with you. You got a great conversation going with Mr. Horowitz.
Thank you.
George, you know I'm one of your resident atheists and...
My resident skeptic, but that's okay.
Well, I was telling Tom, George, that but I certainly wouldn't deny the power of religion. And, you know, we all need something to get us through life, something to lean on. And I was telling Tom, you know, opening the Bible is certainly preferable to hitting the bottle or being on drugs and whatnot. But, George, if I may say something facetiously.
All right.
We recently lost the great broadcaster by the name of Rush Limbaugh. And, George, there were tens of millions of people praying for his recovery. So all I want to say is that if there is a God, he missed a golden opportunity by not granting Rush a miraculous remission of his lung cancer. George, that would have been declared the greatest miracle since Fatima. It would have strengthened.
Well, let me tell you what something, Walt. I think prayer kept Rush alive. You know, he was should have died months before he did. Think about that.
Chemo for a year and. You know, whether it's the power of prayer or whether it's the power of science, and you know what I mean.
So how do you adjust? How do you adjust miracles? Thanks, Walt. How do you adjust miracles, Mitch? How do you know what a miracle is and what isn't?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I mean, when we're talking about healing, that's one of the most delicate topics out there, and I always approach it very carefully because I never want to give anybody false hope. Never. But at the same time, I don't want to discount the fact that there are extraordinary healing events. And it's really hard to talk about because these events are rare, but they are consistent and they are documented. And I think they can justly be referred to as miracles, regardless of what's going on. I mean, our friend who called is, you know, he's an atheist, so he might say, okay, well, what occurred was psychological. Another person might say it's spiritual, but regardless, it's an extraordinary event. And in the Miracle Club, I write about an Australian psychiatrist who's now deceased, who studied spontaneous remission of cancer. And I looked at his work because he was one of the very few people who studied this field who was published in the mainstream medical literature, and he basically established the fact that in around the world, as well as here in the United States, here in the U.S., there are about 15-20 cases a year of spontaneous remission of terminally diagnosed cancer. I cannot jump to conclusions, and I would never jump to conclusions about why that is so. But those cases, they are there, they are consistent, they are real.
And they are miraculous.
They are miraculous. Whatever the cause, they can justly be described that way.
Yep. Tom in La Jolla, California. Hi, Thomas. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call.
You got it.
And Mitch, great conversation tonight.
Thank you.
You know, you were speaking about forgiveness earlier. Mm-hmm. In the interview, and I'm reminded of you do readings, Mitch, of Neville Goddard.
Yes.
You, Immortal Man,
yeah.
Great reading of Neville Goddard, also Infinite Potential. And in your reading of Neville Goddard in Infinite Potential, you speak about Neville Goddard's concept of revision.
Mm-hmm.
And he called it the pruning shears of revision. And Neville Goddard stated that that was what he wanted to be remembered for if he was remembered for one thing.
Yes.
And what Neville Goddard recommended was that at the end of each day, you would review the events of the day and you would revise it. You would not see the day as it happened, as it was, but you would revise it as you wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Neville Goddard emphasized that the past was not set in stone. We believe that the past is set in stone. And he said, that's the world of the senses. But if you step away from the world of the senses into the world of your imagination, then the past is malleable,
yes,
and you can change it. And Neville Goddard gave numerous examples of, like, people who were physically injured, and they would, at the end of the day, revise the events of the day, and they would revise the injury, and then they would wake up the next morning and there was no injury. Mm-hmm. A miracle, you might say.
Yeah.
And it seems like the practice of revision would be good news,
mm-hmm,
to people who make mistakes, who transgress, who trespass against their neighbors, against their fellow humanity, because what it means is that you can sit down and you can revise the past. The past is not set in stone.
Yes.
And you can reimagine it, revisualize it, and it will be that way. And it seems to be the original message of Christianity and forgiveness. Jesus would instantaneously revise at the drop of a hat, so to speak. You know, he would instantaneously revise the past as to what he wanted it to be. And so I was wondering if you would expand on that, what your personal experience with revision of the past, that it is the ultimate forgiveness, if you will, and that the past is not set in stone. I'm not talking about changing a memory of the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about actually, as you put it, the serial universe.
Yes.
You know, actually changing the events of the past, because you've stepped away from the world of the senses to the world of your wonderful human imagination.
Yes. Thank you so much for that. And, of course, Tom, you know, I recognize your voice, and I always appreciate hearing from you.
And great caller.
Spoken about Neville Goddard before. Appreciate it very much. There was a great teacher who said, the past controls the future, but the present controls the past. The past controls the future, but the present controls the past. And the miraculous events that you're describing, I think, can occur even when we just take a different attitude towards the past. You know, if we look at something that we've suffered in the past, a tragedy or a misfortune, well, that very tragedy and that misfortune could have been a very refining, positive, maturing episode in our lives. And I often say to people, you know, we sometimes like to play a game with ourselves. What would I do, you know, if I could travel back to the past and give my younger self advice? My contention is, if time is an illusion, if linear time is an illusion, then it stands to reason we may be doing something like that all the time. We may be revisiting the past constantly. And one must be careful, because sometimes something that we may recollect as painful could have made us more mature people, could have refined us. I think we could all identify challenges that we've had to face that made us better individuals. So we might want to be careful sometimes. Sometimes something that we describe as tragic or fractious might be the thing that produced some of our best traits today. So we have to approach these things very carefully. But I think even just shifting your attitude about the past is a real, actual act.
That, well, that's a step up, Mitch, for sure. We're going to come back. We'll take final calls with Mitch Horowitz in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us. Incredible story about the universe and time, and then followed by conversations with Cheryl. We'll take your calls in the last hour of the program. We'll be back with Mitch Horowitz in a moment, the Miracle Month, and take final calls as well. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Mitch Horowitz with us. His book, The Miracle Month, the final calls we will do this half hour as well. Mitch, where do folks get the book?
Oh, well, you can get it anywhere you buy books, you know, any online bookseller, any retail bookseller. It is available on a special right now on Kindle for $1.99. So that's
wait, how much?
$1.99.
That's it?
That's it. You know, I don't know how long it's going to last, but they've had it on special for about the past week. It's on special right now. So if you want to check it out on your device, it's very inexpensive to do so.
All right, let's go back for final calls. We will go to Guy in Buffalo, New York, to get us started. Hey, Guy, thanks for calling.
Thank you, George. Always a longtime fan, and I absolutely love your shows with Mitch. You guys have a great rapport together.
Thanks.
It seems like he's really becoming one of the great ones. And I'm normally not up at this hour. I'm a Coast member, and I usually listen the next day. But with Mitch, I had to call in. I had a couple synchronicities with Mitch. And then also, I had a question. George asked you about tarot readings, Mitch. Mm-hmm. I received one of your tarot readings early on when you first started doing it. Very inexpensive, and it was a great reading.
No kidding.
My wife actually got one, too.
Wow.
Very, very valuable.
Terrific.
I'm very happy that I was able to get it from you. It was just so heartwarming.
Wow. Glad to hear it.
I actually read a couple of your books, and I actually like going to bookstores and going in the section looking for your books. And the last time I was in there, I couldn't find a Mitch Horowitz book. I was getting kind of perturbed, and I came upon this book. It said Forward by Mitch Horowitz. Ended up being a really, really great book by Royce Christen.
Yeah.
And he obviously, reading the book, he thinks the world of you. And I actually just combined your 10-day miracle challenge with his scripting process.
Wow.
And it's just wonderful. The synchronicities are coming out. But I wanted to talk about the Miracle Club that you wrote. And I was reading that book. This is a few months back, or maybe it was last winter, actually. And I was, you know, ended a chapter, and I was running my kids around, and then we went to McDonald's after, and I'm sitting in line in the drive-thru, and a song came on that I never heard before. And it was actually Mirror Man. And you had, you know, when I went home, that was the... You quoted that song in the next chapter on Neville Goddard, and I'd never heard that song before. And it was just so funny that I just finished reading, and that was going to be the next thing I read in that book. And then I hear that song that I never heard before. And that really leads me to my question, because in your club book, The Miracle Club, you never explained it, but you did call Neville the Mirror Man.
Yes.
And I wondered why. He was actually called that.
Right, right. Neville believed, and that is a terrific story. I really love it. I quote one of the lyrics of Mirror Man at the beginning of that chapter about Neville. Neville believed that the world is a mirror, that everything that we experience, including my words that you're hearing right now, are just you. You know, this is your world projected out. And so if you follow Neville's teaching, he would even say, look, you know, all of this comes from you. I'm just a vehicle. Mitch is just a vehicle. George is just a vehicle. You're hearing these ideas right now simply because you were prepared to encounter them. And Neville believed that the world is entirely self-created. So everything that we experience is essentially a mirror of self.
Indeed, indeed. Next up, thank you, by the way, Guy. Appreciate it. Pamela's with us in Corona, California. Hi, Pam. Go ahead.
Hi there, George. How you doing?
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Hello, Mr. Horowitz.
Hey there.
I really love listening to you on the radio here. I just wanted to tell you about a couple miracles. I've had several miracles happen to me in my life, starting from an infant until, well, recent. And the recent one, it was back in 2014, and I was diagnosed with colon cancer. And as I had completed a test that verified that I had it, and the surgeon came into my room to tell me that I was positive for colon cancer.
Oh, jeez.
And I don't hear so well out of my left ear. So I'm sitting in the room, and it's just the two of us talking, and I can hear the doctor in my right ear. And in my left ear, I hear a very quiet, but the voice was there. I know what I heard, and I heard a voice say, you are not going to die from this.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it said, and I didn't. And all I had was the surgery. I did not get chemo. I did not get radiation, nothing else, just the surgery. And I've been cancer-free ever since.
That's wonderful.
That is a miracle, Mitch, isn't it?
It really is, and I'm very touched to hear that story. I do believe, you know, that these things enter our lives, and you know, we live in a very mysterious world. You know, we don't have, you know, it's almost like trying to understand the unseen world is like being on our knees peeking through a keyhole. You know, we just get glimpses of it once in a while. And I think what the caller just described was a glimpse of that unseen world. You know, there can be no question right now in our generation that I think we can all agree that we lead extra physical lives as well as physical lives. You know, flesh and bone is not all there is. We just simply have evidence at this point of the anomalous transfer of information in laboratory settings. We know that in particle physics, for example, a particle doesn't get localized to a single place until somebody makes a decision to take a measurement. We live in a strange world, and it goes beyond flesh and bone and cognition and motor skills. And what that caller just experienced is something I really bow my head to. I think that's a glimpse of the extra physical quality of our lives.
Joe, Long Island, New York. Thanks for holding, Joseph. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Mitch. On the subject of prayer, you know, I think of, you know, a racetrack jog on where, you know, you have trouble pole to pole. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the whole time. And, you know, I was looking at the book of James, and look at the beginning, chapter 1, it talks about really looking in the mirror, that idea of saturation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to James chapter 5, and it says, "He who is in who has trouble, he should pray." So, you know, you have troubles that saturate, and then you pray with a saturation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, I'm thinking you can't really farm out all your prayers. You know, hey, pray for me. Mm. It's like meditation. You got to do a lot of it yourself.
Yeah.
I think. And the other aspect of this I'd ask you about is just making decisions on the run. You know, sometimes you just can't adhere to all of your principles or ideas when you're on the run. Like, look at Lot's wife. She was getting escorted by angels, but she was in unfamiliar territory, you know, and made that mistake.
Yeah. The pressures of life are such that, you know, we just cannot function according to our principles at all times. And it's really important to be frank and to be upfront about that. I mean, you know, especially since, look, we have emotional lives, we have physical lives, we have mental lives. The mind says, I'm not going to get angry when, you know, some event happens, but then the event occurs and the emotions are running off on their own, you know, or we vow, listen, I'm not going to overeat or whatever it is. You know, the body wants more food and the body takes it. So we're really in pieces, you know, we're in pieces, and we have to just keep trying, try again, but also be frank about these things. I mean, I think people who write books about practical metaphysics and things of that nature also have to be frank about their own failings. You know, in the new book, I try to really be upfront about that. I try to share with the reader my own failings from my youth, today, and to really be blunt and frank about it, because, no, we're not made to always live up to our principles, but we can't let that stop us from trying.
Oh, absolutely true. Let's go to Bill in Los Angeles. Hey, Bill, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, George and Mitch.
Hey there.
Do you think it would be a miracle if my wife, Hillary, ever forgave me?
Are you doing the Bill Clinton routine?
Well, listen, if it's something that you wish for very deeply, and if it goes against, you know, and if it would occur against all expectation, yes, it would be a miracle. And I think if you go to bed each night picturing her forgiving you and picturing yourself as the man who is worthy of her forgiveness, I think something may happen. I say that from the
heart. Was a pretty good Bill Clinton, by the way.
Yeah,
wasn't
it? You almost think that's Bill Clinton calling?
Almost got me. Almost. Richard's Anchorage, Alaska. Hey, Rich, go ahead.
Good afternoon. Good evening.
Hey there.
My conversations with people that disease and decisions, we have addictions and diseases because of bad decisions. And I get argument, people won't accept the fact that their decisions caused the disease rather than the disease came and then they made all the bad decisions. And where can you go with that?
Well, you know, I think it's a mixture of factors. I mean, I agree with you 100% that the accountability is on the individual. No question about that. There are certain things that, that I think some of us have a bodily susceptibility to. Like, for example, I've never had a problem with alcohol. I can take it or leave it. I can have a couple of drinks, leave it alone. Somebody who suffers from alcoholism, that person starts drinking, they can't stop. You know, so they've got a different bodily situation than I have, and it's hard. But ultimately, of course, I agree with you. The accountability is on the shoulders of the individual. It's just that some of us are just born with certain proclivities toward a substance, and, you know, the physical pull of that substance can be overwhelming. Another person doesn't experience it. But ultimately, it does come down to the individual to contend with it, to deal with it.
Let's go to our friend Cornelius in Louisiana, wants to chat with you, Mitch. Go ahead, Cornelius.
Hey, Mitch.
Hey there.
George, and
hi
all
there.
The callers and listeners. George, I wanted to say, Walt, boy, he's something else. I wanted to thank Thomas from La Jolla last week was saying that I got my pardon from Christ, and that was a great thing that he said for me. So I had to acknowledge Thomas from La Jolla. Hope he'll call me one day. Mitch, I wanted to say this. A lot of the callers, just like this last caller, my mom had multiple myeloma, and she was supposed to die within a year. Because the coast-to-coast audience praying for her and the local prayers and prayer warriors here, she lasted 3 years. Just like Rush was supposed to die in October, he knew this. But because of the prayers, and that's what I want to tell Walt, sometimes you don't get the miracle because God has our birth date and our death date set. We have nothing to do with that. But whatever we do between those times is, you know, our choices and stuff. But my mom didn't choose to have that disease, so I kind of regret that Richard said that, because nobody chooses to have a disease. You know, it can come up on you just out of the blue.
Yep.
Yeah. I think, you know, in his defense, he was referring specifically to addiction, but I dig what you're saying, of course. And I will say this about prayer. This is something I mentioned at the end of the Miracle Club. Every single day, 7 days a week, at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, I enter into a few moments of silent prayer and intention. I call it the Miracle Club. There's an alarm set on my phone. I'm doing it every single day at 3 p.m. Eastern. Anybody who wants to join in with me once or every day, please do. And know that you will not be alone, that there are people in different time zones, different parts of the country, different parts of the world who are joining together at that time. Nothing stops me from doing it. So every day you've got me and other people that you can join in prayer with. A few moments of silent attention, a few moments of prayer.
Mitch, and of course, prayer works, we know it, but why?
That is really a tremendously mysterious question. I'll say this. I do believe we have something to learn from our ancient ancestors. Whatever our faith, whatever our background, the ancients from all over the world, from Siberia to Polynesia to the Mediterranean, all identified some greater force or some higher power, or whatever term you want to use. They personified it. They sought a relationship with it. They petitioned it. And this has been going on since humanity has walked the planet. And we're doing it today, and I think we have to learn something from the ancients. They were great engineers, they were great timekeepers, they were great hunters, they were great agrarians, but they also had a deeper understanding of nature than we have, and that understanding included the extra-physical.
Mitch, give out your website and how people can track you, sir.
Sure thing. Website is MitchHorowitz.com. It's brand new. There's lots of video clips there, including clips of me on George's show, Beyond Belief. And there's links there to my books and social media and all kinds of things.
I had fun at BeyondBelief.com with you. That was a great show.
I love doing it all the time. Always enjoy it.
Mitch, you take care of yourself. You keep in touch. And how many books have you now written, including this one?
I'm losing count, but I think it's been about 15 at this point.
I love it. Very prolific, my friend. Up next, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us with an incredible story of time and space.